As I mentioned earlier in giving the eulogy for the repose of the soul of Sister Maria Mechthild, I said that that would be our reflection today about renouncement of the spirit of the world. And what a wonderful inspiration that story from the life of St. Philip Neri, who kept asking the young man, "And then what?" So we already asked ourselves that question today. Or if we haven't, let's be sure to ask it of ourselves today. And then what? In that light, the things of this world do not matter at all. Status, wealth, personal achievement, they're not necessarily wrong in themselves, but so often they do become wrong because people make it their primary end in life instead of loving God. But as I said, the goals that worldlings set, they mean nothing in eternity. When we stand before God, He won't be interested in any worldly goal that was reached. The only question He will ask is, "Did you love me? Were you faithful to me? Whatever you did, was it for me or was it for you?" So you can see why St. Louis insists on 12 days of reflection upon renouncement of the spirit of the world. Because if a person is tied up with the things of this world, he can't make any spiritual progress. There's too much in the way. It has to be removed. Notice that he doesn't say, nor did our Lord say, we have to remove ourselves from society. Sometimes we wish. As you see society deteriorate more and more, and you want to shield yourself from it, but for the most part, it's not practical. It's not possible. So we have to live in the world like the early Christians did. They too lived in the world, but they were most certainly not of the world. And that's what sets a true follower of Christ apart from everyone else. The true follower of Christ is concerned with the things of eternity. The worldling is concerned with the things of this world. As I said, we already made our reflection upon that, I believe, in a very deep way this morning. So what I would like to do in this conference is to go on to the second step, knowledge of self. Why is that so important in the spiritual life, to know ourselves? Just as we had to remove the obstacle of the world, we have to remove the obstacle of self. It doesn't mean to annihilate ourselves, but it does mean we have to remove those things in us. Our self-centeredness, our self-will, our self-conceit. You see, that can be a real obstacle to God as well. It's just in a different way from the world. When somebody becomes a religious, leaves the world and lives in a religious community, there's a great blessing there of being removed for the most part from the world. But he or she brings his own, her own fallen human nature into the convent, into the seminary, into the monastery. And that's who they have to battle for the rest of their lives. But not just religious, all of us have to battle our own fallen human nature. We are our own worst enemy. We know who our enemies are: the world, the flesh, and the devil. The world, we try not to pay attention to it, disregard its materialistic axioms and maxims. We don't live by them. But what about this daily dying to self, which is for everybody? St. Paul talks about purging out the old leaven. He said, we are crucified. We are dead in Christ. What does he mean by that? He means dying to oneself. And that is not an easy thing. It's painful to die to ourselves. But it is most necessary so that God can more fully come in to our hearts, our souls, our minds. The devil, he'll always be around. We can't control what the devil does. As a pure spirit, he can go anywhere. And I want to just retell this story. It just bears repeating how difficult it is to deal with the devil. But a saint was allowed to see the devil at the gates of a city one day, and he was taking a nap in this vision. Now, the devil doesn't take a nap because he doesn't have a body, but it was the appearance of taking a nap, and the saint was able to ask him, "Why aren't you in that city tempting people? Isn't that what you do?" And according to this story, the devil yawned and said, "Well, they're already doing what I want them to do." Later on, that same saint saw a monastery and how many demons were there at the monastery. And the way it looked to him, the walls were covered with devils. Because that's where his real work was. Not with all the sinners already on the road to perdition. Sure, he'll nudge them along. But these monks that were trying to live a holy life, a life pleasing to God, that's where his real victories would be if he could succeed. So it bears repeating. It's quite a reflection. The devil, how he is out to get us. But, and I forget which saint this was, it may have been Saint Augustine who said, "The devil is a chained dog. And God does chain him up. Sometimes he unchains him, but for the most part he is chained, and he will just try to scare you with his bark. Just don't get close enough to get bit." So those are our enemies. In the first step, we already reflected on renouncing the spirit of the world. So that is taking care of, you might say, one of the enemies. The devil, just always, in whatever state of the spiritual life we are, we always battle him, always drive out his temptations, his evil suggestions. And yes, you know, another thing that is going to come from the devil time and time again? Discouragement. He is going to whisper in our ear, "Why try? Look at all the times you failed." And he knows exactly what happens when he can get us discouraged. Of course, we have our own personal discouragement. It's part of our fallen human nature to fall into discouragement. But be sure he is there whispering in your ear, why are you trying? You know you failed before. And we have to say, devil, leave me. I am not going to give in to that discouragement. The devil knows that when people get discouraged, they stop trying. So he's clever, and he's had many centuries of practice. And didn't the bishop tell us yesterday in the sermon about the dumbest devil, if you want to call him that, is smarter than many, many people together on earth? Very intelligent. So we will always have to do spiritual battle with the devil, but other than repelling him, we can't really control what he's going to do. He's going to do whatever he wants to do within the parameters, the limits that God sets. Sometimes he does even allow obsession or possession. But for the most part, he's going to be that chained dog. So let's focus on that third enemy, and it is our greatest one. It is ourselves. We bring our fallen human nature along wherever we go. And my dear brethren, we are wounded because of original sin. We have to start looking at ourselves, taking a hard look, and it's not going to be easy. But look at ourselves, we must. I'm going to talk about the examination of conscience, especially. But why are we wounded? We're wounded because we inherited the sin of Adam. And St. Thomas Aquinas said, with original sin, we were wounded with ignorance. We were wounded with malice. We were wounded with concupiscence. And we were wounded with weakness. That beautiful baby just born, or even better yet, just newly baptized, is already wounded. Already has the seeds of malice, of weakness, of ignorance, concupiscence. It's the fallen human nature. When God created Adam and Eve, he gave them that power of not having, or that gift of not having any wounds, of having no struggle between the body and the soul. That was a miracle, because the body and soul by nature go against each other. And so when Adam sinned, we lost that gift. We reverted to our natural state. But even worse than that, it was now a natural wounded state. And all the sins that we've committed in life, they have wounded us in some way. But all is not dismal, because this is the beauty of redemption. That God would become one of us, would die on the cross, that he would reach down into this wounded, fallen, evilly inclined humanity and say, I want to make you better. I want to lift you up. I want to change you. I want to heal those wounds. I want to make you holy. And that is the power of God's grace. And we must never forget, it is greater than any problem, any sin, any difficulty we could ever have. God's grace is that great. It is that amazing. So it's not for us to take a dim view and bewail needlessly our fallen, wounded condition. Rather, we should focus on what God can do with his grace and our cooperation to rise to something to rise to a supernatural life. But it's going to be a battle. And it's going to be a battle our whole life, because how can we ever say, I've finished all the dying to self that I need to do. My fallen human nature has been entirely subjugated. No, we'll never be able to say that. Till the day we die, in some way the flesh can rebel against the spirit. So we have to know this enemy. And he will have to die. And what we mean by that is our fallen inclinations. That things, those things in us that go against God, that pull us away from virtue, that distract us from accomplishing God's design for us. Now, we can't deal with this enemy unless we know the enemy. It was surprising to me, but very, gratifying is the word, to realize that one of the ancient Greek philosophers, if not more of them, felt that one of the greatest needs of human beings was to be honest with themselves. And I'm talking about Socrates. He made it his byword. Now, this man didn't have the benefit, living some 400 years before Christ. He obviously didn't have the benefit of the gospel, but he would go around saying, know yourself. And he said, in effect, the vast majority of people refuse to take a good look at themselves. And because they don't do that, they cannot progress, they cannot grow in true knowledge. And that is true. We need to know ourselves. But why? What makes it hard? Well, because we don't like looking at ourselves, at how weak and sinful we really are. I'd like to give you a tool today. You've heard of it, I'm sure, many times, but to talk about this tool. It's called examination of conscience. And we've done this many times. We know it's a requirement for the sacrament of penance to, you know, and to help us, we sometimes use a card that has, did I do this, did I do this, did I do this? And we, you know, make a quick review of it, and we say, well, I should confess this. It'd be good if I confess that. But what makes it difficult to really peer deeply into ourselves? Because it's painful. You see, the better we know ourselves, the more we realize how much we have to change. And so it's more convenient, it's more comfortable just to, you know, take a quick look at ourselves, a quick look at our faults and sins, and move on. But if we're serious about holiness, then we have to take long, hard looks at ourselves. And it's not going to be pretty. And there's also a difference in the level in which we examine our conscience. So often, you know, people just say, oh, I did this, I did this, I did this, I'll confess it, make a new beginning, and that's good. But what they really need to do, what we all need to do, is look deeply and say, but why did I commit that sin? Why did I fall into that fault? That's where we really start making spiritual progress. And the saints would compare that to weeding. Which is more effective, to just come along and cut the tops off the weeds? That's what we do, of course, when we cut grass. But what happens? It just grows right back. So when we examine our conscience and not just say, what did I do wrong, but we ask ourselves, why did I do wrong? Then we're pulling those weeds up by the roots, and then they'll have much less of a chance to grow back. But how futile it is, if you really want to get rid of weeds, to just cut the tops off. But so often we do that. Just cut the tops off, and it should be no surprise why we do not progress more. We're not reaching deeply enough. One of the great paradoxes of the spiritual life is the more you grow, often enough, the less holy you feel. And I've shared this analogy, this story, many times. You've probably heard it from me in Days of Recollection, but it goes back to my being probably a sixth grader. And I remember Brother Dennis was giving us a talk about the spiritual life, and he said, you know, if you have a room that has dirty walls and you have a 5-watt bulb in the middle of the room and you're inside that room, it's not going to look bad. But if you put in a 25-watt bulb, all of a sudden you start noticing more and more how dirty the walls are, and then put in a 100-watt bulb, and then you're really floored at how bad the walls really are. And it's almost like the walls are getting worse, but really they're not. They were always that way. It's just that you didn't have as much light in your soul. So I think that's one of the paradoxes, the great paradoxes of the spiritual life. We will see, as we grow spiritually, as we have more grace come into our souls, we're going to say, oh my goodness, look how weak and sinful I am here. Look where I am here. And it's almost like we're going to find more and more things to confess. Not that we're sinning more, but we're discovering our sinfulness more. And it's not easy. We don't like looking at ourselves in this way, being honest with ourselves, being brutally honest. So no wonder St. Louis Marie de Montfort talks about examination of conscience, or rather knowledge of self. And yet, yes, he does also say, examine your conscience. He says that repeatedly. And if someone is regularly and faithfully examining his or her conscience, that person will grow spiritually, no doubt about it, indubitably. Because you're seeing what you have to change and you're doing it. But again, our pride gets in the way. We don't want to see how bad we can be, how we are. So let's talk about examination of conscience. I've already said, you know, we try not to just cut the tops off the weeds in our souls, but try to uproot them by asking why. Why did I do that? Now, we need two kinds of examination of conscience in our daily schedule. Well, three, actually, you could say. And I urge you all, I know many of you are confraternity members and you practice this already as part of your rule of life, but, you know, in the morning, don't just get up and start going about the duties of daily life. In your morning prayers, have some kind of meditation, some kind of reflection, and, you know, heart-to-heart talk with God. And one of the things you absolutely need to do is to make a resolution, especially against your predominant fault. Each one of us has a main fault that is our downfall. And it varies from person to person depending on one's personality type and proclivities and so forth. You know, for one it will be this fault or sin, for another one it will be that fault or sin. We need to know our predominant fault, and we will discover it by faithful examination of conscience. Identify it, and then have a plan for the day. How will I practice this resolution? And of course, we remember that a vice is always overcome by its opposite virtue. A bad habit has an opposite virtue. A fault or failing has an opposite good deed. And we have to, with our morning meditation, make that resolution and also say, I will renew it at different times during the day. Just even if you fail, doesn't matter. I will renew that resolution. Do it several times in the morning, several times in the afternoon. And you start making much more progress. So at noontime, we need to have a couple of minutes at least of what we call particular examination of conscience. And basically, it's a spot check. You're about halfway through the day. How did you do on your morning resolution that you formulated earlier on? You know what's a really humbling thought? You look back to your morning resolution and say, did I ever renew it? Did I even remember I made a morning resolution? Well, chalk that one up in the humility column. We all can use plenty of opportunities for humility and humiliation. That's what the saints did. They chalked it up in the humility column, all of their failures. And of course, they didn't give it to the devil, and I was talking about this earlier, why try? You failed. Don't listen. So at the particular examen, you renew that resolution, and then in the evening with your evening prayers, examine your conscience, not only on that resolution you had for the day, but the whole day in general. And that will help you to formulate a spiritual battle plan for the next day. Maybe you've made some progress in a particular resolution, and then you realize in your general examination of conscience at nighttime, there's another area that needs more attention. So something to remember, and you formulate a different resolution tomorrow morning. But I warn you, it will be easy to give up on examination of conscience, not only because it's trying to establish a good habit, but it is a difficult habit from the very beginning. Taking that honest look at ourselves, and we are not inclined to do this. We'd rather just think very benignly of ourselves and how good we are, how great we are, and we have to say, no, I am going to be honest and look at what I need to overcome, what is offending God in my daily life, and face up to it. If we can do that, we are truly growing in knowledge of self. And the more we realize what has to be overcome or dealt with, it will actually help us transition into the third step, knowledge of Mary. The more we realize how weak and sinful we are, how much help we need, that's why we go to our Blessed Mother. Blessed Mother, I can see more and more and more how much I need you. I can't do it by myself. Help me, Blessed Mother, to die to my fallen human nature. It goes against God. And if I can't empty myself of self, then how can God take over my life, my soul? He can't. There's not enough room for self and God in our souls. It's going to have to be one or the other. So let's empty ourselves of self. Difficult process. It's not something that should discourage us, overwhelm us, because we have our Blessed Mother and we have God's grace to assist us in this all-important part of the spiritual life. Empty ourselves of self and fill ourselves more and more with the goodness, the holiness of God.